From team-focused breakdowns, prospect rankings, and interviews with some of the brightest up-and-comers in the game, Locked On MLB Prospects is the best way to stay plugged in on the future of your favorite team. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today is Wednesday, July 28th, 2021. Coming to you with part two of my interview, or my conversation, I should say, with Alex Carr from The Good Fight. We discussed everything from the trade deadline, the course of the season, and he even shed a little optimism here on the podcast. Been having a few guests do that recently. So, again, without any further ado, here is my conversation with Alex Carr.
And you're not, you know, throwing away a game. What was it, like 5-2, 6-2? When you're putting in Eniel De Los Santos?
I can't. So, don't make me do this.
No, I'm gonna probe the Girardi thing because I've gotten a lot of actually flack and some support, but over the course of my time as this podcast host, I've been very critical of Girardi. I was essentially calling for the guy's head after the Castellanos Winker game. I mean, I didn't understand how a guy who apparently won the World Series as a major league manager and that team was stacked.
When you got Mariano Rivera and your
team has like 5 Hall of Famers on it, like maybe he didn't do that much. I'm not suggesting that, you know, he didn't have to like manage some egos or whatever, but maybe that's just what he's good at, not the in-game decision stuff. There have been times, I mean, I'm just going to rattle them off the top of my head. Forget the optics of leaving, you know, a pitcher off the scorecard. Forget the optics of taking your ace out this year because you forgot how many mound visits there were. Forget like the number of things we could list there. How about the fact that he has brought in guys in bad high leverage spots, whether it's Hale, whether it's Neftali Feliz? How about the fact that he was brought here as a quote unquote culture changer and he's been a 500 manager, basically, in my opinion, with more talent on this team than, say, a guy like Gabe Kapler had? And now we're seeing, obviously, what Kapler is doing with the Giants. I'm not trying to say it's all him. They're getting, you know, freak years and freak production this season, at times this season,
yeah,
from Evan Longoria and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt. And it's like, where is this even, and Buster Posey, like, where is this even coming from? But, like, besides the fact that I think it's clear to me, and I think you agree, that Kapler was not the main issue with this team, even though he was often scapegoated for that, and then he ended up being fired. Girardi, like, it's the only take, in my opinion, is that he has been wildly disappointing. Like, there have been times where it hasn't happened so much recently, but over the course of the season where he has literally cost them games, and you can get mad at the players on the field all you want, but if the manager is putting in the wrong guy, or there have been times where just like the fundamentals of the game, I don't know how much you chalk up fundamentals of the game to the manager, but it seems like stuff they should have gone over in spring training, like knowing what base to throw to or base running stuff, also gets, you know, kind of thrown out of whack here. So any impact that I would expect a manager like a Joe Girardi, who again, in theory, has cachet, was the manager of the New York Yankees, the biggest, most scrutinized and most analyzed team in all of Major League Baseball, and one of the most analyzed teams in all of sports, and the biggest media market in the sport and like in the country, in the world. And then he comes to Philly and like just some of his explanations for things don't make sense. His clubhouse management doesn't make sense. But again, the in-game decision making oftentimes does not make sense. I remember there's a game in St. Louis where he left Chase Anderson to bat with bases loaded and he goes back in for like 2 more hitters. Like, what does he not understand the National League rules? Does he not understand that Ranger Suarez can only face one guy in New York and they're going to pinch hit with Kevin Pillar and he's going to hit a home run? Like, Alex, stop me here, but like, I could keep going. It's been infuriating.
No, keep going, because this is the problem that I've had all year. And it's the reason It's the reason that I've started now. This is so petty, but it's the reason that I've started making predictions. Not necessarily predictions, but on Twitter, I say, okay, I don't like this move from Joe Girardi because, and I do it during the commercial break, so that people can't say,
well, it didn't work in hindsight.
If you didn't say it in hindsight, it doesn't matter. I questioned it before then. But anyway, it's the big one for me, like the big one where I was like, and there were multiple earlier than this, but the big one for me is when he put Connor Brogdon in with 2 outs to face Jock Peterson.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Jock Peterson, who formally cannot hit a left-handed pitcher to save his
life. Yes, know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know this. The man's got he's got the charts right in front of him. He like it was
you don't need the charts. The Jock Peterson's known for as a platoon guy.
Exactly. He's got the chart right in front of him. Doesn't even matter. He puts Connor Brogdon in, which I admit Connor Brogdon's changeup plays well in lefties. I don't mind that. If it were any other hitter than Jock Peterson, I would have been totally fine. But he puts Connor Brogdon on the mound when you've got, I mean, it doesn't even matter if you don't have enough left-handed pitching. Like, you put a lefty on there regardless. Just switch the role that Connor Brogdon's going to play in the game. He can give you a setup role if you need to. Just put some lefty on the mound and let the guy strike out or, like, dribble out. And he put Connor Brogdon on the mound. And it wasn't what necessarily lost him the game, but it was what just – it made me lose my mind. I was so confused. I just could not provide an excuse. And it's not that I would want to make excuses for him. I mean, he truly, truly – it does not matter about what his – reputation in the clubhouse is, which obviously it's bad because Bryce Harper talks his way into baseball games when he's hurt. It doesn't matter what his reputation is with the media, which is bad because they had to put constraints on what he could and couldn't say about injuries and stuff like that. It doesn't matter about any of that. What matters is that the man at the beginning of the season was making a double switch every time he changed pitchers because he could. And wasted his
bench. He loved double switches.
Which else. You'll notice now he has not been doing that as much.
No,
he's
he
not
hasn't.
Been double switching as much, which I guarantee you is a sign from, you know, someone further above than him. Or, you know, maybe it's, I don't even know who could be whispering in his ear. But obviously somebody talked to him about it because it wasn't working. And why would it work? It's the stupidest strategy you could ever come up with. The problem was he was overmanaging when he didn't need to overmanage and undermanaging when he needed to overmanage. And he could not find the balance. He still can't. He is. And now he's just playing it as a very mute, very basic manager, which is, you know, fine. Managers ultimately shouldn't have so much impact on the game. They should have, you know, a game-altering decision maybe once every 10 games that, you know, either wins or loses the game, whatever. But now he's been playing it very vanilla, very safe. And I don't like it. I don't like it at all because he was getting criticized and I guess he couldn't handle the heat, so he just took away everything that he was trying
to do. Well, you're not even allowed to criticize his decisions if you remember that
one. Oh, God. It's just – it is absolutely ludicrous. It is ludicrous that he is still around, but I understand why they have not fired him. I understand why – you know, he has to kind of stick around for a little bit. There's no real other options out there that I, you know, I'm looking at Hensley Mullins as I, you know, just stare through the window of, you know, who could maybe be available. Maybe I don't even want to say Buck Showalter, but I'd take anything at this point because I'm just so dumbfounded every day by every single one of his decisions. It is mind-boggling to me how somebody like him has the reputation that they do. But that's baseball.
That's baseball becoming one of my favorite baseball cliches, by the way. You mentioned Connor Brogdon. I forgot about the game in San Francisco, or not in San Francisco, against the Giants at home that I was at, in which he let Connor Brogdon stay in long enough.
Just hung the dude out to dry.
To allow two separate three-run home runs, which broke like a major league record for the first time in like 100 years. Someone had done that in the same inning. And the reasoning was because no one else has ever been granted the opportunity to try and do that. It literally is because why would you?
Especially when this is like one of your young budding relief, like
you trying to kill the guy's confidence or
fixtures. You know? And I guarantee if you take away a good like that one appearance of runs from Connor Brogdon, he probably has like a sub-3 or so ERA.
Yeah, he's been very good other than that.
He's been outstanding, but why? Just why? It is so, oh my goodness gracious. It really does. It grinds my gears beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I understand, you know, having a bullpen like that has Mariano Rivera in it. I honestly couldn't even tell you who else was in that 09 bullpen. But having Mariano Rivera, you know, or just having a closer in general. And this kind of brings us full circle, right? Having a guy that you can point to and say, hey, that is my closer. It makes all of your bullpen decisions a lot easier because you get to just say, hey, Craig, or hey, I'm trying to think of other Kenley, Jorge, you know, this person, we're going to you in the ninth, right? And so everybody else, you just got to get us to the ninth. Instead of saying, you know, okay, one of you four is going to get us to the ninth, and then one of you four is going to close us out. Good luck. And then it just, it doesn't end up working, and it's just a tire fire.
Just really quick, other relievers in that bullpen, you had Phil Hughes, you had Phil Koch, David Robertson, actually, a 24-year-old David Robertson was in that
he
bullpen.
He must have been great. Was he amazing that year?
He had a 3.30 ERA. He pitched 43 and two-thirds innings. His whip was 1.35, and he struck out 13 per nine. And he walked. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit different than the David Robertson we know here in Philadelphia.
We don't know a David Robertson in Philadelphia. The guy maybe pitched a third of an inning and then, you know.
No, I know.
Took his $26 million and ran.
he is a former Philly. People forget that.
miss him.
Yeah, well, certainly we can hear those numbers from 2009. So quick question, and maybe this affects how the outlook of the season. I feel like it's kind of the conversation has maybe died down because he's making less double switches and playing it safe. If the Phillies don't make the playoffs this year, does Joe Girardi manage the 2022 Phillies?
Man, that's a hard question, isn't it? Just due to the sheer lack of candidates.
Is that a reason to keep a guy around, though? Like, just because
no, you don't have... But then who do you hire? Rob Thompson? Like, you're not going to take Rob Thompson without Joe Girardi. Like
that, yeah, that's his left-hand man. Like,
it's just not...
Well, they've gone the bench coach route before with Pete Buchanan, yeah.
Look, I think maybe you go out and you try to poach someone, like, but there's no guarantee that you can. I don't know. I honestly don't know. My gut says yes. They'll let him write out the contract and just see what they can make of it. But man, it really is a depressing. I wish Raul Ibanez didn't take a job with MLB, because that would have been like my number one, like, hey, let's go get Raul. Like, that would be awesome. But yeah, there's just a real lack of candidates out there. And no, that's not an excuse for you to keep him around. No, that's not an excuse for, you know, he should just write out his contract. But it really does feel like they screwed it up with Gabe Kapler. And it's, you know, I don't want to say it. It doesn't feel good. I wish that Gabe were still here.
But there is a little bit of like a sarcastic, like, you'll smile, at least all well, kind of like, I'm no. not, gonna, I'm not going to be pissed if the Giants win the World Series.
This episode of Locked On Phillies is brought to you by rockauto.com. With the ever increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all of the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using rockauto.com. Why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rockauto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for more than 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even that new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all of the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com.
Look, here's the thing about Gabe Kapler. One of the nicest men that I have spoken to in Major League Baseball. Look, whatever flack you're going to give him for past discretions, you know, to which he was a witness of, I understand. I hear it. I still don't think we have enough information on everything that went down with his time in the Dodgers organization, but I digress. Personally, the way that I have known Gabe and the way that I have interacted with Gabe, one of just the coolest people in the whole world. Treated me like a human being, was just the the peak of niceness. And, you know, still talk to him. He is just doing amazing things. And I, it's not exactly the I told you so moment that I dreamed it would be. But, you know, the guy knew what he was doing. He just, that was the situation in which, you know, right guy, wrong pieces, right? Or maybe, you know, maybe wrong time. You know, he was still new and learning and trying to work out the kinks. So maybe he just needed to move on to another organization. But I mean, it is just so disappointing to see, you know, the Phillies have a guy that couldn't manage his way out of a box, and the Giants have this five-head genius pushing all the right buttons, you know, and they're winning the National League West, which is just a juggernaut that has added a third team to the cycle.
It's just because the Giants are unbelievably good. Yeah.
It's unreal. I never could have imagined it, but I mean, it's when you get one of, you know, the Dodgers top executives in Farhan Zaidi, and, you know, you have him pick a guy like Gabe Kapler, and they're all analytically inclined and they all communicate and they're all, you know, young and smart and good at what they do. It's, you know, it's a recipe for success, I guess. Maybe the Phillies should take a look.
I'm now rooting for the Phillies to make the playoffs for, I mean, I was rooting for that anyway, but I'm now rooting for a very specific reason, which is that if the Phillies, first of all, if they somehow found themselves, it's unlikely because the winner of the NL East is going to be the three seed. And it's back to the winner of the NL West is likely going to play the wild card. But if they somehow could find themselves either especially matched up against the Giants, but just the Phillies in the postseason to begin with, when Joe Girardi inevitably makes some sort of like series costing move, the first guy I'm calling to get back on the podcast is you. And I'm not even going to probe it. I'm just going to let you rant. And it's going to be phenomenal. And I'll probably be pissed too and chime in at some point, but I'm going to let you start the rant. And I feel a little bad doing that because, you know, we were talking last time and, you know, I know you try and look at things, you know, self-proclaimed, you know, glass half full kind of guy. You try and have a positive spin, but just to hear you go off, and this is like not the one thing, but like something that you're really passionately negative about. And maybe I'm kind of a jackass for like, kind of rooting for that, but it's kind of fun. Like I think
it's not
funny.
It's not just you. So for those who don't know, I stream regularly on Twitch, you know, talking about the games, talking about, you know, the Phils in general. And my chat always gets very excited when I get on these rants because, you know, it's very hard
people
to catch
that
me
stuff,
at a,
yeah.
Oh yeah, it's hard to catch me at a in a light where I'm not speaking positively about something or being, you know, glass half full, as one would say. But when I get I'm very passionate. That's what a lot of people know that about me. But when I get passionate in a negative way, it's a bit stronger than my positive passion. And so, especially when it comes down to you know, stupid people making stupid mistakes,
when it comes to the lefty righty splits of Jock Peterson, hell breaks loose.
I really think I'm not even exaggerating. I think I sat in silence. I was streaming during that game. I think I sat in silence for a solid 2 minutes.
I have music that
plays on my stream, and so it was just the music in the background. And then it got back from, you know, obviously Brogdon was throwing his warm up pitches, whatever. And then Peterson stands in, it's like two pitches in the sequence. And then Jock hits that dribble single, you know, up the, I think it was up the right field line, something like that. But he hit a single through the right side of the infield. And I just like, I shrugged to the camera and I was just like, there you go. Like that's
I wish exactly I said I couldn't see it coming, but oh I did, God. You know, I could.
It was painful, just painful, truly.
So I'm going to get you out of here on this, and I appreciate your time. We've been going for like an hour strong here plus, just because we're very passionate about these Phillies, and it's trade deadline week. Nothing's even happened yet. Can't even imagine what it would be like if we were reacting to something that's happened. By the way, I know you have internet, but as far as nothing's popped up on my phone here that anything's like broken down. Something will probably break the second we end this call or of that nature. But you're sitting here today, it's July 25th. You look at the NL East standings. and the Phillies are four games out of first place. They have a 49-49 record, sitting behind the Mets, five games back in the loss column, for what it's worth, three games back in the win column. If I had to say right now, just yes or no, will the Phillies be playing in the postseason? Alex Carr, you would say what?
Yes.
I see, that's the positivity I needed. That's why.
What would you say? What would you say?
I would say no.
Interesting.
Like, it's just yes or no. I mean, if we were making a bet and you gave me some sort of odds, but I'm looking at a team four games back, I think they're going to be, you know, air quotes, in it till the end. I think they'll be competitive. I think they're going to be on this 500 seesaw. I'm not saying they won't flirt with a little bit better than that based upon what they get at the deadline, or maybe they get a better NOLA here down the stretch. But until I see more consistency again with what's on the roster, and you and I agree, by the way, that what's on the roster probably needs to improve as much, if not more, than whatever they can add at this deadline. I've seen too much of this team, and maybe I'm too, you know, plugged into this team, and I'm being a little bit too emotional right now, but I'm looking at a team four games back, only five back in the loss column, only have six games directly against the Mets left, and saying they're going to have to go on a run at some point. A guy like Aaron Nola is going to have to go on a run at some point. The offense is going to have to go on another one of those like beginning of July tears and probably keep it up for like a month for them to make it up. And I haven't seen that out of this team in 4 months. So if I'm removing the fan in me, I'm not going to predict it to happen now.
Sure.
That's not to say they shouldn't go for it, but, and like, I haven't kind of come around the idea that they're going to be buyers, even though for the longest time I was like, yeah, they should probably sell. They're not close enough. And now I'm looking around the NL East and saying, well, it's the only division in baseball they could possibly win. This is why you hired Dave Dombrowski. He's not the rebuild guy anyway. They're going to go for it. But if you told me like right now, like yes or no, just even money, I think, unfortunately, I would say no. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm dead wrong.
Yeah, and I definitely understand where you're coming from, and I get it. Believe me, I am, and somebody who watches this team objectively as well as from a fan's perspective. I mean, I just think that there are way too many holes in these other NL East teams. I mean, look, I'm somebody who really hasn't been a Braves believer for a long time. I'm very glad they've regressed to this point, because this is where they've been headed, you know, if it weren't for many things breaking right. And this was my, you know, this is what I thought the Braves would be for these last 2-3 years. And they really overachieved, and now they're kind of settling back in. But, you know, I don't think that the Braves are one of those teams that you will have to worry about the entirety of the remainder of the year. I think that they will probably not end up selling at the deadline, but I don't think that they will be adding aggressively. As far as the Mets go, there's just way too much in that. I mean, unless they add some supremely huge bat, that offense is not strong. And the pitching is good, but it's regressing rapidly. Marcus Stroman, Taijuan Walker.
They're on the downward slope. You're correct.
I don't know how long Tyler McGill is going to keep this up, but, you know, whatever. Obviously, you know, any team with Jacob DeGrom on it is going to be, you know, they're going to be in it. But I don't see these teams being the juggernauts that thought they were going to be.
I don't think they're juggernauts either. I think this division in many ways could very well be a limp to the finish.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more, again, maybe I'm more just too plugged into the Phillies and highlighting on their negative aspects of their team and not really seeing how things could go poorly for a team like the Mets. Otherwise, again, like, yeah, they're sitting in second place. I'm not so worried about, for a second there, it looked like the Braves were going to finish ahead of the Phillies after this weekend if they lost today's game. And now suddenly they're looking at second place, and I always just get afraid when you're looking at more than one team above you. The games in hand thing, I've been saying a lot, and maybe I shouldn't harp on it so much, but it actually just annoys me that the schedule makers only left six games remaining with the Phillies and Mets after the trade deadline. Like, baseball's at its best when those two teams are playing multiple series in September, and they play once in Philly in August and once in September in New York. And like, that's it. And I mean, is it fair to say that the Phillies, like, those are must win series, both of them, like at least two out of three, more than likely, if they're going to win this division? Is it fair to say that they need to find a way? They got 2 4-game series coming up against the Nats to win 3 of 4 in one, if not both of these series, that they have to win 2 of 3 from the Pirates. Like, I feel like we do this a lot in saying they need to do this. And then finally, I said they need to win 3 of 4 from the Marlins last weekend, and they did it. But it felt like the only time I had said they need to do this, and they do it all season. It's maybe my lack of belief in the Phillies kicking in. Like, if I had to ask you right now, how many wins do you think gets them this division? Because I've kind of been hovering, well, 81 wins is exactly 500, but I've been in the low 80s with this team and saying on the high end, it goes 85, 86. If you get a little bit of a turnaround with the current roster and at the trade deadline, and thinking that on the high end, that 85, 86 mark could be their best shot to make the playoffs, because maybe that number gets done.
Sure. Yeah. I had them at, so for me, I had them 86 preseason. I thought that that's,
what I think we actually agreed on that. We gave it both at the same time, and we agreed on that number, but like, that's now my high end, not like my average.
Yeah. So I think it really just depends on how aggressive both of these teams are at the deadline. But I think that I don't think 86 is going to win the division. I think the division will be decided in the 80s, in the high 80s. If not in the high 80s, maybe the early 90s. I don't see this team.
I don't see them getting into the 90s.
Right, exactly. I don't see this team as constructed at all getting into the 90s, not even coming close. But I think that there are ways that they could improve to then find their way to the 90s, perhaps. I mean, truly, I think that if they were to acquire a closer, the ripple effect would have substantial impact on their entire pitching staff. And as for a bat, I mean, I don't think they'll get one that's a huge difference maker, but I do think that they'll be able to, I wouldn't say stick it out through, you know, I think this lineup is good enough to the point where it can win them the games that they need to win. I think they could definitely use a right-handed bench bat to really, you know, give Joe Girardi the options he needs. He needs a guy with power off of, you know, the bench that's right-handed. He just needs it for strategical reasons, if nothing else. So I think that based on their trade deadline, we will need to reevaluate and see how the team ends up coming together. I think Ronald Torres being, a more than zero factor for this team is weird. And
his numbers aren't great. And I don't know how to quantify this, but he comes up big in big spots.
Yes,
like a lot.
His peripherals are bad, right? But he knows how to put the ball in play, first of all. Second of all, he shockingly has the clutch gene embedded within his system. And he also hits the ball where defenders aren't somehow. And I'm not going to say, you know, he's just a BABIP god, because he pretty much is. But it's too much to be a fluke at this point. It is, just statistically, it is too much to be a fluke.
This episode of Locked On Phillies is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans, and this app is free to download. And once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, and athletes and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. Locked On Green Room, again, it's the perfect place to start or join a conversation about Major League Baseball. You'll find fans just like you on Green Room for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to other big news or rumors. You'll even find Locked On hosts across the NBA, MLB, and NHL platforms, as well as the NFL, with that coming up in just a couple of weeks here. Again, I'll be joining the app soon, so be sure to get started, and I will meet you there. Go download the free Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter account, and join the NFL, MLB, NHL, or NBA group for the latest league updates. I know you'll find a ton of incredible rooms of your favorite teams and leagues. I can't wait to join you all in the app. I'll be sure to let you know once the Locked On Phillies room is live. Download the Green Room app today. Green Room, it's changing the way we talk sports.
Well, it's like the Little League. Just put the ball in play. Good thing. Exactly. Happen, I guess.
But that's what the team hasn't had. I mean, they don't have guys that are.
The 2021 Phillies are now relying on just putting the ball in play because good things will happen. And Joe Girardi, one thing we didn't even say about Girardi, my favorite thing maybe about Girardi is that he loves the Little League third to first play. They've actually scored multiple runs on it. I was at the game the other night when, Hoskins runs and gets himself in the rundown essentially, and Harper scores. It's a brilliant play that apparently does not end when you're 10 years old. So, see that.
it's a mess. It's such a mess.
They find themselves in a lot of really, really weird baseball games. And that's just like the fact of the matter of it. And it's not going to be it's not going to be a pretty winning of the division. In fact, it will likely be ugly.
It never will be.
No, it never will be is correct. But you're right. It could. And I'll be sitting here a week from now and saying, and this is the final prediction I'll ask you to make of how rejuvenated. Like, I'll be the one sitting here after the trade line saying, like, all right, now I'm back all in. They acquired this guy, this guy, this guy. Here's why they're going to be good for the next 2 months, right? And last year, I talked myself into why Brandon Workman as the closer is going to really work. Like, I'll talk myself into anything. No. Like, I was like, new start with the Phillies, it's going to work, right? I tried to. Like, I was really trying to believe. That could not have worked any less.
Yeah, that was not the one.
That was not the one. And it's like, I knew he was bad. But the second he's on the Phillies, I'm like, I really tried to do the glass half full thing. And this is why I have trust issues with looking at things positively, perhaps. Right. So give me a prediction of someone that you think will be on the Phillies or something that they will add. Like when we're sitting here a week from now, not even a week from now, like 5 days, what's going to be on this roster? How more excited will we be about the Phillies roster a week from now than we are sitting here as of this moment?
That is such a hard question because
I know I'm putting you on the spot here.
Primarily though, because if they do go over the luxury tax threshold, the options that they have after that are limitless. I mean, you can go out and get, Craig Kimbrell and then pivot and like say, I don't even know what albatross-ish contracts there are out there, but like Charlie Blackman comes to mind. I don't know, like guys that have no business playing. I guess center field would then be your option, but like, and not that I want to put Charlie Blackman in center field, but somebody like that, right? Like, here's a better idea: Trevor Story. Right. Trevor Story's having a bad season. Trevor Story is, a guy that could probably cover center field to an average capacity, or better yet, you put him at shortstop and then just, say DD ride the bench, Ronald Torres ride the bench, or maybe Ronald Torres play third sometimes. I don't even know. But if you went out and you got Craig Kimbrell, you go over the luxury tax, Trevor Story's owed like $17 million, somewhere around there, and is having a bad season. You're not exactly going to have to compete with anyone that's not the Yankees to try and get Trevor Story. And the prospect impact to your system probably won't be as much as you think it will be, just given the dollar amount that you'll have to take on from his contract and the poor performance that he's put up this year. So it really does kind of beg the question, if they go over the luxury tax threshold, will they add until they can't add anymore? Because why wouldn't you? So it's a hard question to answer right now because we don't know what their direction is. It will be a heck of a lot easier to answer in a couple of days. But if they do go over the luxury tax threshold, people will be very excited, not just because of the fact that they went over the luxury tax threshold, but because they will add a lot. Because there's no reason to just, like you said, flirt over the luxury tax threshold. If they don't go over the luxury tax threshold, you might be a little less excited, but you'll still probably get some quality guys that, will help you more than Brandon Workman and David Phelps and Heath Embry did last year. that is for sure.
Well,
because it can't get any worse.
To say that's a really low bar, so I'm really feeling confident now. But I do feel a little bit better about the Phillies now. My good friend Anthony DeBundo on the podcast the other day, and both of these episodes will actually be up later this week. And both of you were kind of are more positive on the outlook of this team, actually for different reasons, you know, whether it's the trade deadline, the schedule, you know, he's a betting guy, whatever the case is. So I'm now more positive than I started the weekend at. And that's kind of
there you go.
Baby steps. That's my hope. But you guys are the first guys I'm going to blame if the team blows up at the end. I bought myself back. I find myself without any choice. I can sit here and be the grump. I don't want to be the grumpy old man who's like, oh, this team's going nowhere, because I'm still going to tune in. I want a reason to stay invested. I think at the trade deadline, they're going to attempt to do that, whether they go over the tax or not. But just stay in it because of, I guess, you know, just be the best of the worst, as they say.
This is your curse. This is your curse. You have been cursed with, being a Phillies fan. I've seen too much.
I've seen this movie before.
This is the way that these things happen. But look, Anthony is right. The schedule also bodes really well to their favor. That's something I neglected.
It does. And they're going to face a lot of AAA lineups of teams who have sold and trying out new guys. But they just placed a AAA lineup with the Yankees. Yeah.
We also know they do struggle against bad teams. And that is just not
great, a good right? sign.
But they've been better against bad teams this year, surprisingly. And in all honesty, they actually haven't faced a lot of them.
Schedule up to this point.
Yes, which is why you see the second half schedule being so much easier. And I mean, 30 games against combined, at least against, Miami, Baltimore, Colorado, Chicago, the Cubs, because, you know, they're going to sell everything. And Arizona, I think, is the last one. That's a substantial amount of games. That's more than half of the remaining schedule. So, or not more than half, but almost half the remaining schedule. So it's substantial. And I'm not going to say that they will succeed in defeating all of these bad teams and sweeping them and, dismantling them bit by bit. But it's a heck of a lot easier than having to, face the Dodgers or the Padres or any other of those teams. And they've beaten those guys, so.
Alex Carr, at Alex Carr MLB on Twitter, of course, on The Good Fight, or writer for The Good Fight, I should say, oftentimes on Twitch during Phillies games. Anywhere else that people can find you?
I think that's it. Just on Twitch, it's at Take a Bulk. And on Twitter, it's at Alex Carr MLB. Come follow along if you like positivity, if you like Phillies baseball. Or if you like prospects, I dabble. And if you like just people getting mad at Joe Girardi, you're gonna love me because I do that a lot.
That's all. You just hit the entire shopping list of what I need
exactly.
right now.
Exactly. That's legitimately all I do. So I just sit here and I say nice things and then bad things about Joe Girardi.
He must have really screwed you over the wrong way.
I was looking forward to it too. I was like, "Oh, Joe Girardi, that's a great hire."
Joe Girardi. Like, he's on the one man list.
It sucks because
Joe Girardi, he's broken positive Alex Carr. You hate to see
my pinned tweet is still the morning that Joe Girardi got hired. I texted Gabe Kaplan and I was like, "Hey, what do you think?" And he gave me a quote and I put it on Twitter and it blew up. But that's still my pinned tweet. Even though all the things that I say about Joe Girardi are just so scathing and evil. But I'm not going to say he didn't deserve it.
Alex, it's always fun when we do this. This was the second time you came on. We did a preseason. We did it here midseason. And hopefully, you'll be talking, we'll all be positive about this team if and when they make the postseason. I'm not as convinced as you or as my friend Anthony DeBundo are. But again, this is a situation, as I often do, where I hope to be wrong. And one thing that should be solace to everyone out there, and it's kind of become a running thing on Twitter. So my childhood nickname is Buzz, and I have branded the hashtag Buzz Jinx on Twitter. And every time I make a prediction of like yesterday, I'll just be sarcastic. I sarcastically tweeted, well, the good news is that Aaron Nola always comes through for the Phillies in a big spot. And he did today. So, you know, the buzz jinx never fails. I'm saying the team will not make the playoffs. So I'm doing what I can over here. So I just, you know, remember that.
The Lord's work, Dan, the Lord's work.
That's exactly right. Alex, always fun. We definitely will have to do this again down the road.
Can't wait, man. Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for part two of my conversation with Alex Carr. Special thank you for Alex for coming on the podcast again. Always fun talking with him, and especially right before the trade deadline at a pivotal point in the Phillies organization and when I could use a little bit of optimism for the fan side in me wanting this team to make a run at the postseason. So special thank you to Alex, and special thank you to you all for listening. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at Dan_Wilson4. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, again, at Alex Carr MLB, and all of his good work over at The Good Fight. Betting on baseball doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get your podcasts.